Albert Mohler Program, your place for intelligent Christian conversation about the issues that matter. Dr. Mohler is president of the Southern Baptist Theological Seminary and one of the nation's leading theologians and cultural commentators. To get online with Dr. Mohler, call toll-free nationwide, 1-877-893-TALK. That's 1-877-893-8255. Now, here's your host, Dr. Albert Mohler.
Hello, America. Welcome to the Albert Mohler Program. Should Christians have any particular concern about a woman serving as president of the United States? Not any particular woman. This isn't about the virtues of Hillary Clinton or the downside of Hillary Clinton as a potential president, but about the question of a woman as president. This is one of those interesting questions that has emerged in the midst of the 2008 presidential race, and it's one I think we need to take on and have an honest, intelligent, mature Christian conversation about whether or not we should even be concerned. And if so, on what basis? And what would be our argument for that concern? And how should that translate into a public policy decision, a political decision, an electoral decision? The phone number to join the conversation is 877-893-8255. That's 877-893-TALK. There are those who are saying, as Mrs. Clinton has said, that the ultimate glass ceiling is the presidency of the United States. The Oval Office is thus far impervious to a woman candidate. But that may not be the case in 2008. Obviously, Hillary Clinton is a frontline candidate for the Democratic nomination. And it looks like there's a very real possibility that the incumbent in the White House could, if the election goes the way that it is forecast by some, could be a woman. Would that make a difference? We're not talking about a Democratic woman or a Republican woman. I'm not talking about a liberal woman or a conservative woman. Would the very fact that she is a woman be a crucial factor, an important factor, a factor of the Christian conscience and Christian thinking? The phone number, 877-893-8255. 877-893-TALK. First, to review some issues in the news, let me just announce that my book, Culture Shift, Engaging Current Issues with Timeless Truth, is released today in bookstores by Multnomah Books, and I'm proud to have it out and hope that you'll be able to get a copy. It reflects the kind of conversation we have on this program. In the book, I try to set out an agenda for how Christians should engage the culture, a theological framework for how we should think through our responsibility to the culture, even to the political culture and the political situation and the political decisions that we face. And I also take on a number of issues related to those that are in the headlines and those beyond. What I'm hoping to do is to help Christians to think about how to think, and in particular, how to think Christianly. The book has 20 chapters. It's available in your local bookstore. You can go to my website at Albert Mohler, that's MOHLER.com, and find a copy of it as well. And we'll be talking about it from time to time, but I'm glad to see it now released today nationwide in bookstores across America. At my website at albertmohler.com last night, I posted an article entitled, Does Marriage Matter? It has to do with the conversation we had on this program yesterday. We had a really fascinating conversation about the response to Newsweek's My Turn column by Bonnie Esslinger, in which she says she wants to say yes to love, but no to marriage. So I really encapsulated some of what we were talking about yesterday and put it out there so that it's an article that you can cite and find, of course, at the website. And you can also track back from the article to Newsweek magazine and the original article, the My Turn column in Newsweek magazine. The Chronicle of Higher Education is out with a list of the top 10 most literate cities in America. America's most literate cities have been ranked by six criteria, including newspaper circulation, number of bookstores, level of education. Here is the list. Number one, Minneapolis, Minnesota. Number two, Seattle, Washington. Three, St. Paul, Minnesota. Four, Denver, Colorado. Five, Washington, D.C. Six, St. Louis, Missouri. Seven, San Francisco, California, 8, Atlanta, Georgia, 9, Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania, and 10, Boston, Massachusetts. Now, this does turn some expectations perhaps on the head. Number one, New York City isn't here. New York City thinks of itself as a city of bookstores. Of course, it has some marvelous, big, huge bookstores. But by a ratio of people to bookstores and libraries and all the rest, it really kind of falls off. I'm surprised that Minneapolis is number one, St. Paul is number three, so the Twin Cities rank first and third, and you put them together, that certainly is a very powerful combination. Then you have cities like St. Louis and Atlanta and Pittsburgh that might surprise people. Boston, number 10. After all, this is the Boston that, in terms of greater Boston, has institutions like MIT, Harvard, Boston College, Boston University. So it is somewhat surprising that it went this way. Seattle had held the top spot in 2005 and 2006. The Chronicle of Higher Education says to Seattle, perhaps it's time to cut back on the coffee and start buying more books. Get your ranking back up. Other issues in the news include a report from Science Daily that divorce widens the distance between teenage children and fathers. Let me read to you from the study. It says the typical distancing from parents by adolescents is exacerbated by divorce for fathers, but not for mothers. This is published in the Journal of Marriage and Family. Historically, teens distance themselves from parents and increase involvement with peers, said co-author Dr. Alan Booth. He is professor of sociology at Penn State University. Coupled with divorce, this distancing may result in further declines in parent-child closeness. Parental divorce, according to the report, creates an immense pressure to decrease father-child closeness, supplemented by the many barriers created by the father's physical separation from the children. Fathers who are often the less involved parent before divorce would have to increase their investment in the relationship just to maintain pre-divorce levels of closeness, which the vast majority of fathers do not do, according to the study. Now, I'm not sure why the study was conducted. I'm sure there was a valid scientific reason for it. But from a Christian perspective, this really tells us something about how divorce can be very deceptive and how self-deception can enter in. Because there are an awful lot of men out there who say, I can be just as close to my children even if I go through this divorce. I don't want to be married anymore, but I can still maintain my relationship with my children. This kind of study is indicating what really should be obvious, and that is self-deception. It's self-deception to think you can maintain that relationship. Here, the Journal of Marriage and Family is very clear that fathers in particular pay a huge price in alienation from teenage children after divorce. It says that teens' withdrawal from fathers was much more severe among those teenagers with divorced parents. 56% said that their withdrawal was almost complete. So that's more than half. That's a shocking figure. After divorce, teenage children, more than half of them, say that they are significantly distant from their fathers. Non-divorced couples had teenagers that were only 28% saying that they were withdrawn. So you're looking there at a very, very big thing. In fact, a doubling, almost exactly a doubling there that can get to that point. It would really get our attention as we look to this. It says the proportion of youths who reported a consistently close relationship with their father was much higher among those with still married parents. That's 48%. Than among those with divorced parents, which is 25%. Now, that's encouraging on the marriage side. In other words, you had 48% of teenage children who reported a consistently close relationship with their father. I think a lot of Americans might be surprised that it would be that high. And especially talking about teenagers here. But I do think that's a very, very encouraging thing. So in one report, you have encouragement about the importance of marriage, with all these teenagers saying that they have a very consistently close relationship with their fathers. And you have a stern warning based in research data about one of the perhaps unintended consequences of divorce, with the majority of teenage children saying that they are now alienated from their fathers after divorce. Liz Hancock, by the way, writing in The Telegraph, which is one of Britain's major newspapers, says that our obsession with aesthetic and plastic surgery now is only a hint of what is to come. Because what is being developed now in terms of medical research is an entire host of new, very radical techniques. They're going to make facelifts and hand lifts and Botox look completely out of date. As a matter of fact, many experts believe that as skincare research advances, invasive procedures will be made redundant. You have all these different chemicals and creams that are going to be used, but you also have the possibility of transplanting fat from certain parts of the body to other certain parts of the body, and even of changing the bone and muscle structure for aesthetic reasons. In other words, someone who thinks the head might be too short would be able to get an extension to the skull. Now, when you hear that, you think that sounds like science fiction. But, of course, what we're talking about right now as standard medicine would have sounded like science fiction just a matter of a few years back. We as Christians need to be watching this kind of thing with alarm because, after all, this isn't talking about increasing the quality of human life physically. This isn't talking about fixing a problem physically. This isn't talking about even repairing an injury or the recovery from an illness physically. It's purely about aesthetics. Now, one of the concerns we should have is why so much money is going into this. It's because there's a market for it. While there are other areas of medical research that may be languishing for lack of funding, people are so obsessed with looks that they're funding medical research into stuff that sounds absolutely bizarre. Should we be concerned about a woman in the Oval Office, a woman as president of the United States? Do Christians, based in a biblical worldview, have any particular concern we need to bring to the table? How do you think about this? It ought to be a fascinating conversation. I invite you to join me by calling 877-893-8255, and we'll be right back.
The Superior Gold Group, a precious metals firm, is proud to sponsor the Albert Moeller Program. You can get more information about buying gold at 877-8-GOLD-101.
Just 100 years ago in American history, Americans were debating whether women should be allowed to vote. Now, we have a woman who's a very serious contender for the American presidency. It's the first time this has really happened. It's been looming on the horizon for some time. But now we are facing this. And here's the question. Do we have any particular issue at stake with a woman as president? Should we be concerned? Should a woman serve as president? Now, let me tell you what this conversation is not about. This conversation is not about any specific woman, Hillary Clinton in particular. That would be a different program. And the debate would really have to go in a different direction. The question today is just about a woman. It could be a Democratic woman or a Republican woman. It could be a liberal woman or a conservative woman. The issue is woman. Does gender matter? Now, even just 10 or 15 years ago, it really did matter to Americans. But according to Americans in polls now, it doesn't. 92% of Americans in a CBS News poll said that they would vote for a woman. That's 92%. 5% said no. That left 3% unsure. That's interesting. Then you also look at the fact that when these same people are asked if America is ready for a woman president, 55% said yes, 38% said no. In other words, this reflects something that comes up in the polling data again and again and again. People answer the polling data about their own position with what they think they're supposed to say. And then when they speak about whether others agree with them, they discount it down to where they think the reality is. And that's interesting. In other words, if 92% of Americans really did believe that a woman should serve as president of the United States and that were well understood in the culture, then 92% would say America's ready. But then when it is discounted from 92% to 55%, there's something going on there. One of the things that Hillary Clinton has to worry about in the general election, if she were to become the Democratic nominee, is that people would say they would vote for a woman, but when they actually get into the privacy of the voting booth, they wouldn't. That's happened on issues of race. It's happened on other grounds as well. And yet today we're talking about a woman. Now, let me suggest that there are a few things to keep in mind here. Perhaps the first thing to keep in mind is that there is a history of males in leadership. And then you have to come to determine whether you think that's because that's the way it ought to be or just the way that it was. Let's be honest about this for a moment. If you look throughout human history, it's primarily the annals of kings. Queens, if they did rule, were considered unusual. And even though they might be powerful, whether it's Elizabeth I of Great Britain or Catherine the Great of Russia, Mary Louise of Austria, these were considered unusual. Victoria of England. In the main, leadership has been male. Now, if you are a feminist, you assert that that is simply because of patriarchy and the historical process, that we are now in an enlightened age when it's understood that that gender shouldn't matter, that there should be no distinction between men and women whatsoever in the home, in the church, in the society, and in the Oval Office. Then you'll have others who look at that same data and say, well, maybe, just maybe, God has created human beings in such a way that men have a responsibility to lead, a unique responsibility to lead, not because they're smarter than women, not because they're even braver than women in many situations, but simply because God is making a point in the complementarity between men and women. Now, let me say, as a Christian, and I'm thus doing my dead level best to base this on Scripture, I know that when it comes to the relationship between a husband and a wife in marriage, God has been very specific, that there is a distinction, and that it's a matter of his concern for his creatures. When it comes to the church, the scripture is very, very clear. I have no question that when it comes, for instance, to the teaching ministry of the church, it is limited to men as qualified by scripture, and that women should not be pastors. I believe there's a very clear biblical, not only case for that, but argument for it as well. I think when it comes to women in the larger society, in serving in a political office such as President of the United States, it's not exactly the same thing, but I'll admit to you, I still have some concern. Now, let me admit to you something else. If you were to come into my library, you would see portraits and busts, statues of the heroes that I really champion. And one of the interesting things you would see is that there are two female portraits in my library. One of them is Elizabeth I of Great Britain, and the other is Margaret Thatcher. And I'll admit to you, I am a big fan of Margaret Thatcher. If we look back at the Cold War, it was Ronald Reagan and Margaret Thatcher as two elected leaders who probably did more to bring down the Soviet Union than anyone else. You start looking at Britain during the 1970s and the 1980s, and you recognize that if you take Margaret Thatcher out of the picture, you've got a big problem. She revitalized the Tory Party, she brought it into power, and she was, as she was called, the Iron Lady. I admire Margaret Thatcher. If I had a choice, given the priorities I understand as a voter, between voting for, say, Bill Clinton and Margaret Thatcher, I'd vote for Margaret Thatcher 10 out of 10 times. But do I think that a woman would be best in that office? I've got to admit, I don't think it's just a matter of male prejudice to think that it should be a man who had taken that argument and made that argument and offered that leadership. But I'm thankful that Margaret Thatcher did what she did and made herself available when she was available. And so her portrait is on my wall. Okay, count me conflicted. I want to know what you think. The number is 877-893-8255, 877-893-TALK. Let's go to Annie, listening on XM170, calling from Silver Springs, Nevada. Go ahead, Annie.
Hi. I am a Vietnam vet, and so I do have a little bit of experience in a couple of things. And one of the things I want to say is that women should not be on the front lines in the military. And the second thing is that women should not have positions like President of the United States. For two reasons. First of all, because the Lord made men and women differently, and I believe it's extraordinarily difficult for women to make the hard decisions that have to be made as a leader of a country. And secondarily, people in other countries don't necessarily respect women. And so therefore, as the head of the biggest country in the world, this woman would have to overcome prejudice against her because of her sex.
You know, that's a very interesting point. The second point I'm thinking is one that, you know, I really hadn't thought of until now, but you're exactly right. When Margaret Thatcher was Prime Minister of Great Britain, she had to wear a head covering when she visited in the Middle East and certainly Arab countries. Very, very interesting point there. Annie, I want to say you are very articulate and forceful, and I appreciate the point you made. I want to challenge you just a little bit in a friendly way. Do you really think that women are less capable of making those hard decisions? Okay, we lost Annie. I'm sorry. So I wish she'd had an opportunity to come back because I really respected the crispness with which she made that argument. See, I think some people would call back and say no. I want to say that I am not sure about that. I'm not sure. I'm going to take Annie on her word, given her experience. But when I think about this myself, I'm thinking of what in Scripture we're taught to be concerned about with the family, with the church, and that's the picture. What is the picture being held up? And one of the concerns I have is whether a woman president really sends the right picture. Some of you out there thinking, he's nuts. Well, call me and tell me why. The phone number 877-893-8255. We'll be right back.
listening to the Albert Mohler Program, your place for intelligent Christian conversation about the issues that matter. To get online, call toll-free 1-877-893-TALK. That's 1-877-893-8255. Or go to www.albertmohler.com. Here again is your host, Dr. Albert Mohler.
Welcome back to the Albert Mohler Program. We're talking about an issue which is likely to cause a lot of people to scratch their heads and some to wonder, wow, why would he take on an issue like this? Well, it's because I think it's obvious. I think it's out there. I think we ought to have the conversation. Too few are. Should it matter that a woman would be president of the United States? Not any particular woman, not a liberal woman or a conservative woman, not a Democratic woman or a Republican woman, any woman. And we've already had the conversation start, and I've tried to be really honest with you. I know that the Bible is very specific when it comes to the difference in the roles of men and women in the home and in the church. The question is, do we extend that logic to the society? And I'm telling you, I think yes to some extent, but not in the same way. Because there's a different accountability in the public square than there is in terms of the covenant people of God, who are accountable to Scripture as the church, and the Christian family, where I believe it's very, very clear. But I think the picture is important, because I think, again, that's a part of the reality with the family. It's a part of the reality with the church. Young people grow up to aspire to be what they see. Do we want little girls aspiring to be president of the United States? That's an interesting question. Some people would think we're absolutely nuts for talking about this, and their answer would be yes, obviously, of course. It's nothing more than patriarchy and oppression and misogyny that would lead anyone to think contrary. Well, I want to at least talk about it. The phone number is 877-893-8255. And we've had one on one side. Really want to get the call from the other. We've got one here. Kathy from Louisville, Kentucky, listening on WFIA. Go ahead, Kathy.
Well, I just wanted to comment that I feel that God set a precedent for a woman being president when he appointed Deborah as one of the judges.
Okay, I was waiting for this call, Kathy. And I think that's a smart response. You know, if I were going to argue that it wouldn't make any difference, I would point to the judges of Israel, and Deborah being, you know, chief among them as a woman. Let me ask you, Kathy, even in Israel's experience, it wasn't the norm, right? I mean, by the time you get into Israel and the monarchy, you've got kings. Does that at all inform your understanding?
Once
Israel entered the monarchy, no women served as monarch. It was all men throughout the history of the monarchy after the period of the judges.
Okay.
Okay, you're saying that wouldn't change your mind at all?
No, that wouldn't change my mind.
All right. So if it comes to voting for a woman, is it, so far as you're concerned, that a woman and or a male and a female candidate equal on the issues, equally qualified, you would have a preference neither way?
No, I wouldn't have a preference either way. I don't think it would make any difference, male or female.
All right. Well, I appreciate your call. And I'm sure there are many who think just the way you're thinking, and appreciate you making the argument. To join the conversation, call 877-893-8255, 877-893-TALK. From Borger, Texas, Lydia's on the line, listening on XM170. Go ahead, Lydia.
Hi, thank you for taking my call. I tend to agree with you. I would never myself vote for a female president. I just believe that the Lord created us, men and women, in very specific roles. And I just believe that most women make decisions based upon emotion. We're nurturers, we're lovers. We just base most of our feeling on emotion. And I think that's not a good credit for us to be in that position of authority.
Let me ask you, Lydia, do you think men are more brave and courageous than women?
In a different sort of way. I think women are courageous and brave in their own way, but I think that God had a specific purpose for a man and a woman, and I don't feel like you said earlier with the other young lady about the kings all being men, I believe that applies to presidents as well. I don't believe that a woman should be in that position.
Lydia, I really appreciate the point you're making, and I was teasing just a little bit coming back, because I have to wonder where all the brave men are who should be calling this program with an opinion on this issue, because thus far we have had a severe shortage of men, as in none. The women are calling on this, and I do appreciate that. Lydia, you're raising a point that I think is very important, and after Deborah was mentioned with the judges, I think it's really important that you made your point. Because in the United States, the President of the United States is also the Commander-in-Chief. And I'm going to make a statement that I believe with all my heart. I believe that it is an unnatural role for women to be in combat. I believe that it is men who should serve in combat. There is something wrong with a man being defended by a woman in a military sense. And I know there are people out there saying, where's the verse on that? I think it's just the logic of Scripture, and I think it's proved out in the way human beings are together. I just don't think it befits the way we understand the roles of men and women intuitively, to put a woman out front in combat. Well, then that raises a whole question also about being Commander-in-Chief. I don't think it's a slam-dunk case, by the way. I'm talking about concerns, trying to think this through carefully, weighing everything, as I said before. Just given my other concerns, I'd vote for the right woman if it were the wrong man. But there's still concerns. Back in just a moment. This is the Albert Mueller Program.
The Superior Gold Group, a precious metals firm, is proud to sponsor the Albert Mueller Program. You can get more information about buying gold at 877-8-GOLD-101.
Welcome back, folks. Just trying to be intellectually honest here. I want to say that I think my first concern is with the policy proposals, with the actual policy commitments of a candidate. And that's why, as we're going into the close, just take an issue like abortion, just to take an issue such as the integrity of marriage. If I had a candidate on one side who was what I believe to be right on the issues and another wrong on the issues, I would vote just on the issue of abortion, the sanctity of human life alone, for the candidate who held that position, regardless of gender, rather than the other. Just to use a ludicrous example, but one from world history we might imagine. In other words, if in the 1996 presidential campaign I had a choice between a Bill Clinton who was pro-choice, pro-abortion, and a Margaret Thatcher, who was pro-life, I would go with the Margaret Thatcher. But I would still have some concerns there, and that's where I want to be really honest. I would have some concerns there for the same reasons I just mentioned. Concerns having to do with the role of women, with the picture. Concerns having to do with the fact that, and I know this argument can raise some trouble as well, but just think about it. You have women who are running for office as president, who, because presidents are expected to be strong, have to perhaps even compensate for that by making very clear they aren't. Now, Margaret Thatcher, in terms of the Falklands conflict, did exactly that, whereas others might have waited to go into armed conflict. She immediately responded, and many people felt like she was in a position where she had to, because if she as a woman had not, she would have been accused of being weak. You know, what a calculation to get into. Interesting emails we received. Lawrence wrote in to say it's a matter of hierarchy. God has a pattern, and it's for the society. I'm paraphrasing him here, as well as for the church and for the home. Chris writes in saying, I feel that with America being a superpower, other countries may not respect us if we have a woman president. Women do not hold governmental offices in other countries, as some other countries, of course. And if we allow them to hold the highest office in the land, they might think differently of us. Interesting point to be made. All right, let's go to Kathy, calling from Birmingham, Alabama, listening on XM170. Go ahead, Kathy.
Hey, Dr. Mueller. I just wanted to say that I think probably as a general rule that God does put men in positions of authority over women most of the time. But I also think there are times when God calls individuals who may be women for a specific purpose. So I think it's always best to look at the individual rather than the gender, depending on what the situation might be.
Yeah, I agree, I think, with what you're saying in terms of a general rule. And I know that just flies in the face of what a lot of people would think. But you really have to believe one of two things about world history. You have to believe that the fact that men have been the rulers and the military leaders in the main is simply because of historical backwardness and patriarchy. Or you have to believe that there's some natural intuition in human beings, and one that is very pervasive and very strong that leads in that direction. And you really have only those two choices. And, I think if you're just looking at the big picture, there's really something to that latter argument. Let's go to Louisville, Kentucky. Linda's on the line, listening on WFIA. Go ahead, Linda.
Hi, Dr. Mueller. I just would like to say that it's not the norm for God to raise up a woman. Occasionally he did, Deborah, Esther, look at Golda Meir and Indira Gandhi, but as a rule, men have been given the responsibility to lead and protect. And I think inherent in most men is that protective instinct, and which is another reason why I don't think women should be in combat, because a man, it's just his instinct to protect. And they're a real man, I believe, will want to protect a woman. And I just don't think we're called as a gender to lead.
You know, very interesting point, Linda, and especially when you come back to combat, because even though that's a different issue, it's certainly a related issue. Let me just paint a scenario here, and because I think it's a parallel. Let's say that a man and a woman are in combat. Let's say that women are in frontline combat. And by the way, we've been inching that way in our military by redefining certain things. But let's say that you do have this, and let's say that there's a firefight, and one has to take a step to protect the other. I think there's an instinct in most men that it's their responsibility to risk themselves in order to protect the woman. And if you look at that, again, you have to ask the question, is that a wrong instinct? Some naturalist, might say it's simply the product of evolution. Some sociologists might say that's just the process of historical formation, a prejudice built in. But I think, I'm fairly certain, as a matter of fact, that there's an instinct in us that's a lot deeper than that, that tells us that something's wrong when a man would hide behind a woman in combat, then there's something right about a man who would go out and risk. I think there are different skills that men and women have. I don't think there's a difference in courage. I think there's a difference, that is, in the level of courage. I think there are sometimes different kinds of courage. Certainly it's not a difference of intelligence, but there are different kinds of intelligence. Even the psychologists these days talk about multiple intelligences. There are all kinds of different things. I don't believe that women are any less gifted, and frankly, I don't believe that women are any less strong. Motherhood is one of those things that probably calls for as much strength as anything else that humans could ever be involved in. Physical strength, we know there are some differences, and all the rest. The President of the United States, however, doesn't do a whole lot of heavy lifting. The big question is whether there would be a distinction in the way a man would be president and a woman would be president. I think when you put it that way, I think among most people would have to be some recognition that there is some difference. Folks, I really do appreciate your calls, and I appreciate the conversation. Let me just try to sum it up in this way. I believe that it does make a difference. I believe that most of us intuitively inside know it does make a difference. I think it's a difference that does matter. I don't think it matters as much as some other issues. Again, you look at history, you have to be thankful that there were women who were in strategic places at strategic times. I'm very thankful that Elizabeth I became the Queen of Great Britain. That has a lot to do with world history subsequent to that. Having to do with, in fact, the Elizabethan settlement and the aftermath of the Reformation and all the rest. But all you have to do is look at the Spanish Armada and the political instability that England faced because it had a queen who had no heir, and you realize that's a little different, too. Different time, different context. Fast forward to the United States in the year 2008. I think it's still an issue. Now, when it comes to the order between men and women in the home, I think there is a very clear biblical teaching. We're accountable to it. When it comes to the relationships and the roles between men and women in the church, I believe God is very clear about that, and we're accountable to it. I think when it gets to the larger society, we need to be honest and say the Scripture does not speak specifically to that. I still think we have instincts about it that are informed by Scripture, but I think that we as Christians are going to have to think long and hard about this. If it's not your party considering this, it will be before long. The direction of history is simply going that way. Back to Final Thoughts in just a moment. This is the Albert Mueller Program. Welcome back to the Albert Mueller Program. This has been a fascinating exercise, an attempted intelligent Christian conversation about an issue that a lot of people will be afraid to take up. And I have been interested that the callers today were overwhelmingly women. That's probably a good thing. It's good to hear women's voices on this and to try to put it together in a way that we can understand it. And if I could summarize, I think what most of the callers were saying, the majority of callers were saying that a woman should not be president of the United States, and they listed various reasons. But my guess is that under the right circumstances, almost all those callers would vote for the right woman candidate. If it were a matter of deep conviction about public policy issues, a distinction between two candidates, and all the rest. I don't think that gender trumps all other concerns when you look at the political choices before us, but it's still a concern. And there's some people who'd be shocked that someone would acknowledge it's still a concern, but I think that's just honesty. I think when you talk to the average person who answers a poll question, they may answer it in a way they think they ought to answer it, but when it really comes down to it, there is still some concern. I think there's some valid concerns. I think there's certainly some invalid concerns. I think arguments that are misogynistic clearly ought to be out of bounds. I think arguments that women are weak and women lack courage, clearly they're baseless. The women don't have the intelligence or all the rest. That's just clearly not so. The only issue here, I think, comes down to whether or not our intuitions are formed by a Christian conscience, by the fact that we're made in the image of God, and that there is a wisdom, even a natural law that is implanted within us that tells us such things as that a woman should be protected by a man should protect a woman, or is that just something that we can do without? We can now, in this progressive age, move beyond it. I don't think we can. I think there are certain intuitions that frame our minds here. Again, I want to say I don't think they trump everything. I don't think that means certainly that I could never vote for a woman candidate under the right circumstances. If it came down to a matter of conviction and on public policy issues, it was a clear choice. I think we all have to admit, even as we rank different political concerns, ethical and moral concerns in terms of importance in our votes, that would also have to find its way within a certain ranking, and it might differ from election to election. I think it's important that we talk about this because Christians may be the only people who really would want to be honest. Others really may not have much need to be. They can answer the pollster however they want to. But we might have to answer this question to our children, or talk about it with each other in the context of the local church, or just when Christians are having some coffee, talking politics. I think it's important that we think through how we must think as Christians. We'll be tracking this issue with you. It'll be interesting to see how these issues play out in the 2008 race and beyond. As I said in the close of the last segment, it's a Democratic woman candidate running for the nomination now. Before long, certainly it'll be a Republican as well. Back tomorrow for Ask Anything Wednesday. We'll talk about what's on your mind. This is the Albert Mueller Program.
Thanks for listening, and be sure to visit our website, www.albertmueller.com. You'll find archives of past shows and other important resources. You can also email your questions and comments. That's www.albertmueller.com. Be sure to join us next time for the Albert Mueller Program, your place for intelligent Christian conversation about the issues that matter.